Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rota. Our guest today is Robin Ha, author of Cook Korean, a comic book with recipes. Welcome, Robin.
Hi. Good to be here.
The food world is full of perfect pairings, like peanut butter and jelly, macaroni and cheese, and spaghetti and meatballs. Today, I want to tell you about a show about people that are each other's perfect match. It's called One True Pairing. Co-hosts Erica and Marissa talk about love, pop culture, and their favorite celebrity couples. It's full of hilarious banter, fun games, and happily ever afters. Check out One True Pairing wherever you get your podcasts. You've written recipes through comics on your Tumblr and now in your book also. What made you feel that that was the right medium for your recipes?
Well, I'm a cartoonist by training. I went to an art school. I wanted to be a cartoonist since I was a little girl. So it was just a medium that I was very used to and also confident at. And I think comics in general is just a great medium to exchange information, because it not only it just has really great visual, it has words. Also, you can see things in sequential order, which is very important when it comes to things like cooking. So, and it's also fun and casual. You know, people can just pick it up and read it for fun. It's very engaging and friendly medium. So that's why I chose comics.
I think that lots of people are intimidated by the idea of cooking Korean food at home, even if they love to eat it when they go out. Maybe they're afraid that it will be too difficult, or they'll need to find too many specialty ingredients and equipment that they're not familiar with. What are some misconceptions about Korean cooking that you dispel in this book?
Well, I agree with that that misconception, because I thought the same way. Even though I was born in Korea, I grew up eating Korean food. I didn't learn to cook until I was an adult. So when I was growing up, because the Korean food tastes very complex and deep, I thought it took a lot of preparation and it's very, very hard to make. But that is absolutely not true. There's maybe, in my book, there is a section called 7 Key Ingredients in Korean Cooking. So there are 7 condiments that you need to get probably from Asian market. But if you have these 7 ingredients, you can make any of the dishes that is presented in my book and most of Korean food. And a lot of these ingredients are actually available at regular grocery shop these days, like soy sauce, miso paste, sesame oil, things like that are very popular and easy to find these days. And Korean food is a very rustic type of cooking. It's not fussy. It's all just a little bit of this, little bit of that. Just throw in a pot, boil it. That's it, really. It's so simple. Like 99% of the time, it will be like a one pot cooking that takes less than 30 minutes to make. So it's like anything that you feel fearful of. Like once you get into it, then you realize, oh, this is actually nothing. You know, it's not like my fear is completely based on this fear itself. You know, it has nothing to do with the reality of cooking. So I hope that my book actually makes people who were afraid of cooking Korean to realize it's not that hard and you can actually make it at home easily.
I love in the beginning of the book where you have this beautiful graphic layout of the key ingredients in Korean cooking, in the pantry, in the fridge. Talk us through just a few of those ingredients, why their flavor profile is so important, and how they're used in a few different ways in some of the key dishes.
Okay. So the 7 key ingredients that is on the introduction page in my book is Korean red chili flakes, which we call gochugaru, and it's a little different type of chili than regular like habanero or other chilies that's available in American grocery shops. But this and the gochujang, which is the red chili paste, they are responsible for the Korean food reputation about being spicy. And these are the dishes that you can definitely put less or more of. It's all depending on your personal preference of how spicy you want the food to be. And they're actually very, very important thing to have. Like most spicy dish that you like in Korean food would have one or two, I mean, even one or both of these ingredients. And also fish sauce and soy sauce, they are very all this sauce that kind of fermented, they're all very pungent. And that's what gives the deep, complex flavor in Korean cooking. And also sesame oil, that we throw that on top of things that's already cooked to give that nutty fragrance. It's very commonly used alongside with sesame seed. So these ingredients, most of them can be actually found on American grocery shop. I think gochujang and gochugaru, which is a chili flake and chili paste, those two things are probably something you need to go to a specialty store to buy. And the Korean pantry section has some dried seafood that's actually a very key ingredient. It's a really big part of Korean cuisine to eat dried seafood. So like the things like nori, the toasted seaweed, we wrap that seaweed around the rice a lot. And also we eat dried kelp, dried anchovies used a lot in making soup stocks. So things like that are probably what you need to get at the Asian grocery store.
Every week on this show, I tell you about a cookbook that's making big waves in the food world. Good cookbooks matter because they bring families close and create great memories. So I want to tell you about another podcast that explores how books change lives called But That's Another Story. It's hosted by Will Schwalbe, who was a guest on this show back in April. You might also know him as the founder of the recipe website Cookster.com. In each episode, Will talks to an influential guest about the book that changed their life. The guests share personal stories that connect their favorite books to events in their lives in ways you wouldn't expect. It's emotional, inspirational, and really moving. And every week, you'll come away with new books to add to your reading list. You can find But That's Another Story wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for But That's Another Story. One of the things that I love about Korean food is the way that vegetables are treated. They're always so flavorful and often combined and almost used as condiments in some dishes. Tell us about kimchi, which many people will be familiar with, and then the role of fermented and pickled vegetables generally in Korean cuisine.
So Korea is surrounded by sea and also full of mountain, and we don't really have a huge land to crop a big harvest or have a herd of cattle that you can just eat all the time. So the role of fermented food, it was a key in survival of Korean, regular Korean people throughout history. So like we are surrounded by sea, so we can get seafood, abundant amount of different types of seafood all year round. So when we catch all this fish, then it's we ferment it in lots of salt. We just pack it in salt. It's very, very salty, and it lasts a very long time without refrigeration. Kimchi came from the same idea of preserving the food without refrigeration for a long period of time. So during the late fall, the entire village would gather in one person's house and make like truckloads of kimchi. And they would put it in an earthenware pot, a giant pot, and bury it under the ground. And it will last for months. So basically, people who were regular people in Korea didn't have much to eat. So most of these people would basically survive off of kimchi and all this very, very salted, cured seafood and also vegetables throughout the winter.
In the book, you talk about how you actually began cooking while studying abroad in Italy. And having lived in three different countries, how do you think those different cooking cultures contributed to your perception of the role that food plays in our lives and what it means to cook?
Actually, I really think Korean food, this is just like pure coincidence, but Korean food and Italian food are very, very similar. The only difference is that Italian food don't really use that much chili sauce. Like, it's not that spicy, but they use tons of garlic, and it's very, very rustic, very easy, like no fuss type of cooking. So I learned to cook in Italy through a host family. I stayed with an Italian family, and they cooked all the time. And my host mother would take me into her kitchen and just like show me how to cook. And fortunately, her type of cooking was very easy. It was very just no fuss. Like, I didn't speak much in Italian, but even then I understood perfectly what she was saying and how to make all these dishes. So it was a really great gateway for me to get into cooking, because it was a very straightforward type of cooking. So years later, when I lived alone in Brooklyn and I missed eating Korean food, I basically taught myself through looking at lots of blogs and researching on internet, and also looking through books and asking my friends and family. And I realized this is very similar to cooking Italian food. Basically, you just chop a vegetable with lots of garlic and just saute it and throw some sauce. And when I've been traveling quite a lot in my life, and whenever I got to know different types of cuisine, I realized they're all kind of the same type of food. Like, in Greece, they eat kind of the same, like, roasted barbecue meat. In Mexico, they would, like, wrap things in tortilla, which is very similar to how we wrap things in lettuce. So I think even though at first glance things look different or it might smell different, like, essentially everybody in the whole world are eating the same thing, you know? Like, we would eat dumpling, but in Europe they would eat pierogies, or, you know, it's just in Latin America they would be eating empanadas, but they're basically things wrapped in dough and fried or steamed. You know, it's very... Everybody basically likes the same thing, or it made me trust different type of cuisine. Like, it made me understand that, like, it might look different, but when I eat it, I would like it, you know? So I guess it made it easier for me to jump into different cuisines.
I love that. I feel like so many Americans sort of get comfortable cooking by cooking Italian-ish or Italian-American food because it's pretty forgiving. There's sort of the general ingredients mm-hmm. and flavor profile, and you can sort of switch in the vegetables that you like. And I love the idea that Korean yeah. food is much like that. It's sort of, there's a part in the book where you are cooking with your mother and she's telling you, ginger doesn't really go in this. And you're saying, well, I like ginger, so I'm going to put it in this and I can. And now.
That's right.
And
yeah,
I love that.
All, that like, you can really do that. Yeah. It's very versatile. Very forgiving.
There are so many cuisines that I feel like have really been rediscovered or discovered for the first time by home cooks in America because of a younger generation that has either immigrated or is second generation and is bringing these flavors to an American palate in new and exciting ways. I see it happening with Jewish food and Russian food and Chinese food, and it seems like that's really what you're doing with Korean food. What do you mm-hmm. think is the relationship between the way that you cook as a young person in America and sort of the traditional cuisine, and what have you really changed and what sort of stays the same?
Well, I made this book mostly for me or people like me, or even if you're not Korean, like, I feel like my generation of people have less time to cook, less space to cook, and less people to feed, you know? Like, back in the days, people lived, like, all, like, 3-4 generations lived in the same house, and they had big farm, and, you know, they have all the land and time, you know, like, and then women, especially, their role was to basically cook and feed the family, whereas now, like, everybody works, and they have career. So I wanted to make it completely feasible to cook this in everyday life for whoever is cooking. So the traditional Korean cooking, some of them can be very time consuming. Even kimchi, sometimes, like if you go to those villages in Korea where they're known for kimchi and they make it like a very, very elaborate, they put tons of seafood and it takes like a whole day and several people to make it, you know. But if I wrote a recipe like that, nobody's going to make it, you know. Like I wouldn't be able to make it. So I just wanted to make sure that this is a cookbook that people will use. Like, I don't want it to be just a coffee table book or, like, a cultural introduction book. I want it to be an actual functioning cookbook. So I tweaked some of the recipes to make it easier and also simpler and quicker to make, yet maintaining the same flavor. And also, there are some ingredients that you can't really find in the United States. And this book is geared towards American people who, or like non-Korean people who live in America. And I mean, if this is published by an American publisher. So I wanted to make sure that all these ingredients I'm using in this book are readily available, or they just have to go to an Asian market in America to find it. So those are the things I guess I switched or tweaked to fit into American lifestyle.
It's such a fun book, and not just to cook from, but it's also such a great way to tell your story and the story of the food. Congratulations. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Check out Robin's book, Cook Korean, a comic book with recipes, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.